You'd think that beat reporting has been fundamental to journalism since the birth of the business. But in fact, beats didn't really take off till a little over a century ago, when New York newspaper editor Charles E. Chapin of the Pulitzer chain sought to gain competitive advantage over the arch-rival Hearst papers. Chapin's paper, The World, published up to 9 times a day, initially without beats. But then one day, he had an epiphany. James McGrath Morris is the author of a biography of Chapin.
He had taken up residence in the Majestic Hotel and had taken a nap. Now, this is a period when telephones are still new. You know, how you ring somebody is hard. He finally gets through. "Busy," said the operator each time. "Anything happened?" Chapin at last asked.
You describe it beautifully in the book. The operator goes, "Yeah, McKinley was shot."
Yes, she had gum in her mouth. Well, this got him thinking a lot more about telephones, and these were really coming into fashion. So the newsroom at The World had these phone booths that were at the end of the room, and they were labeled 1, 2, 3, 4. Well, Chapin began moving these phones. He put them at the city desk and eventually gave them to reporters. But what was important is he took a map of the city, and he drew a checkerboard pattern on it. And he said to each reporter, "You're in charge of everything that occurs in that 3 or 4 block area." The idea of assigning people with specific responsibilities for geographic areas was already done in one sense. You had foreign correspondents who sent these languid letters. "The Queen has been seen out and about, and the fog is lifting here in London." What Chapin did that really changed journalism was the idea of making the beat a source of facts, a source of information. And he created this rewrite desk of the star writers. And they would sit there with these telephones, and these beat reporters would file all this information in. And they were the ones who put it into the language that inspired people to pick up the paper.
The people who called in, mostly they were the staff of the paper, but sometimes it might just be an ordinary eyewitness, right?
Oh, frequently. You know, journalism was a very public affair. You would take your date down to Park Row, where all the newspapers were, on election night, and they would, on the front of the papers' buildings, they had blackboards, and they would write the news, and people would, by the thousands, would gather there. In fact, this was so popular that when the America's Cup race was waged, the Pulitzer newspaper had these small yachts, and they moved them across the building.
Little model yachts that they slid, depending on who's ahead, like a horse race?
They even did that with a famous boxing match, and they had marionettes reenacting the boxing match. And it was so popular, the crowd wouldn't leave, that they redid it another time. And I like to argue that's the beginning of instant replay. The point of all these anecdotes is that journalism was so much more central to people's lives. And so the development of the beat system in the evening world was one of those innovations produced by the intense competition of that period, and it changed journalism.
What made beat reporting different, and how relevant is it today?
Beat reporting permitted these papers to develop peoplehood expertise. Writer Jacob Riis, who's really known for his photographs, was also a print reporter who made poverty in the Lower East Side his beat.
And wrote How the Other Half Lives.
Exactly. And he knew everything about what was going on. And so it gave authority to the newspapers. And this is also important to the transition that's going on in journalism at that time. Before that, journalism was an immature business. It was very partisan, often supported by political parties. And failed politicians became editors, and successful editors became politicians. It was two sides of the same coin. But when newspapers established their economic independence by writing copy that people wanted to buy, and if people bought a newspaper, you could sell pages of advertising. In conjunction with that was enormous technological change, paper that was strong enough to go through printing presses at incredible speeds, the telegraph delivering news from around the world. And the beat was part of that. It brought news that was reliable to the front page of the newspaper based on some form of expertise.
It's interesting that the beats that seem to be diminishing are those that are not close to the seats of power.
No, the change between when Chapin worked and today is incredibly dramatic. In his period, you could count in any small community in the United States that when the school board was meeting at 11 o'clock at night to vote on a contract, that there was at least one reporter in the corner of the room with a pencil and pad. One of the things that Pulitzer discovered as he became the most powerful publisher on the globe is that merely lighting the recesses of government has an effect. even if they didn't file a story, they were there. The surprising aspect of creating Beats, that was not its intention, but when a newspaper or a radio station or a television network assigned a reporter to a beat, such as poverty, they were saying this is important. And by covering it day in, day out, readers began to think poverty is important, and they began to press public officials to deal with it. The disappearance of the Beats, particularly in those areas which are the least represented members of our society, is the disappearance of those issues from the public agenda. So the disappearance of Beat reporting is far bigger than just merely a change in journalism. It has enormous civic implications.
Now, Chapin developed his own expertise. He became an expert in fostering roses, right?
He certainly did. Towards the end of his career, he murdered his wife and was sent to Sing Sing, which was the most notorious prison in the United States at the time, and spent the rest of his years cultivating acres and acres of roses. And his rose gardens became so famous that people like Harry Houdini, all these people came to visit him.
Is it true that he continued to edit the paper for a while inside the prison?
Not his paper, but he edited the prison newspaper. Almost every American prison of size had a prison-run newspaper, and he was its editor for several years until the state got upset with his style of editing.
Thank you very much.
Oh, glad to do it.
James McGrath Morris is the author of the biography of Chapin called The Rose Man of Sing Sing.
Since WNYC's first broadcast in 1924, we've been dedicated to creating the kind of content we know the world needs. Since then, New York Public Radio's rigorous journalism has gone on to win a Peabody Award and a DuPont Columbia Award, among others. In addition to this award-winning reporting, your sponsorship also supports inspiring storytelling and extraordinary music that is free and accessible to all. To get in touch and find out more, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.